We're on the air. Let's see how the broadcast gets from the studio to your home.
I just want to hear the music, that's all.
Is it too complicated to just keep my records in the category, okay? Just put the rock and roll in with the rock and roll. Put the R&B in with the R&B. I mean, you're not going to put Charlie Parker in with the rock and roll, would you?
What does it all mean?
I don't know. Who is Charlie Parker?
Yes!
Sounds Visual is a podcast featuring interviews and long-form conversations with DJs, crate diggers, record collectors, vinyl enthusiasts, beatmakers, producers, and musicians. All right, welcome back to another episode of Sounds Visual Radio. My name is Justin. Thanks for tuning back in. For this episode of How Deep Is Your Crate, I'm joined by Washington, D.C. native Sir Joe Quarterman, a trumpeter, singer, and composer, whose 1973 album, called Joe Quarterman and Free Soul, was largely ignored in its time, and since its release is now considered a must-have record in the crates for any rare groove, soul, or funk record collector. The album yielded one minor hit, the anthemic I've Got So Much Trouble in My Mind, which garnered some decent airplay in the States, even better airplay overseas, and as so often the case, earned Joe a whole new generation of fans a decade later when it became a go-to sampling staple for producers and beatmakers. But the Free Soul album is only a part of Joe's journey. Joe had been working hard as a musician for years before that, dating all the way back to high school. Although music ultimately didn't pan out for him, prompting him to return to school and earning a degree in architecture, Joe's soul funk masterpiece still sounds as fresh, vibrant, and relevant today as it did 40 years ago. So let's dig into the crates of Joe's career and give this overlooked and underappreciated artist his due. I'm pleased to present my chat with Sir Joe Quarterman.
My name is Joe Quarterman. I'm a musician and singer, trumpet player. I started my music career in the sixth grade. I didn't know I could sing until my sixth grade teacher cut me back after school behind the door, and I started singing to entertain myself while I was waiting for her to leave. And she opened the back door and asked me, would I sing before the class tomorrow morning? I said, no problem, yeah. So the next morning I sang Lucky Old Son, as it was recorded by Ray Charles. And the class stood up and applauded and so forth, surprised me, because I really thought everybody could sing. There was no big deal. Miss Alexander started my career. After that, I went to Shaw Junior High School in Washington, D.C., where I learned to play a trumpet and got together with a singing group called The Knights. The guys were standing on the corner every night singing, and I knew a few songs, so I joined The Knights. I had a very light voice, so I sang Smokey Robinson, Lowell Anthony, and Imperials, songs like that. And we entered talent shows, and we won. Won a few talent shows, and of course our heads swelled up. 1956.
So Joe, after you join up with the Knights, a few years later you end up joining up with a female backing quartet, and that was billed as Sir Joe and the Maidens, and you guys cut a few records in the early 60s.
Yeah, well, the Maidens were created just for me. Since I was Sir Joe, they wanted something to go along with Sir Joe's name. I said, well, Knights of the Round Table had maidens for their wives or girlfriends. Well, it was Sergio and the Knights, or just the Knights, but I was named Sergio in the Knights. And we recorded a few demos, and it was this guy, Eddie Best. He was a local artist, and he knew his way around downtown and so forth, so he thought that I could sing, and he wanted to build a group around me. So he replaced some of the Knights with some of the people that he knew, and he introduced me to Roland Covey. Roland Covey said, well, I think his voice would do much better if he sang with some girls. And he asked me, did I know any female singers? And I knew only the El Colettes, which was a singing group with the El Corals band. And Roland Covey introduced us to a producer. I can't call his name right now, but he produced Big Al Downing, Lil Esther Phillips, people like that. And I recorded a song that I wrote called Pen Pal. That was the B-side. The A-side was Jiving Jean.
On me against little Jiving Jean. Said all that talk just didn't mean a thing. If I would fall in love, she'd break my heart. Fill me with jive right from the start.
I started making professional gigs. I did a gig at Sparrows Beach with Major Lance. He was the top bill. Did some shows in Baltimore, Annapolis, the DC area, record hops, pool parties, things like that.
You had also written a song called I Want My Love, which you cut with Sergio and the Maidens on a 45.
I want my love.
And that song ended up getting you guys some attention locally, right?
And I wrote it for a woman who was a jazz singer. And I don't think she liked the song, because she didn't sing it. But anyway, we recorded the demo under Eddie Best as manager. And we tried to market it. And Atlantic Records wanted to put it out, but the local producer wouldn't let the song go. She wanted 100% publishing, and which I was a young kid. I didn't know what they were talking about. I said, what do you mean she wants 100% publishing? What does that mean? And Eddie Best tried to explain it to me. I said, well, I didn't sell my song too. I didn't sign anything. He kept telling me that, well, she's a publisher. Whenever a publisher takes your music, they can do whatever they want with it. Me as a dumb kid, I didn't know. I went along with the program. So anyway, Eddie Best, he took it around a few radio stations with my voice on it and got some airplay. I got a few gigs out of it.
And then around the same time, you end up joining the backing band for R&B singer Garnett Mims.
Yeah, that came after graduation, a year after graduation from high school, actually, 1964. Their lead trumpet player was going to the Air Force. And we played behind all sorts of stars because we could read music, and a lot of people who played music didn't read. Yeah, we played behind Stevie Wonder, Otis Redding, quite a few people.
Mr. Garnett Mills, tell him what you're going to do for him, Garnett.
So you're backing up Garnett Mims for a while. The late 60s roll into the early 70s. And at what point does Free Soul start to come together?
Free Soul happens 1969. 70. I was playing in Atlantic City and Club Harlem, who were a lounge band. And Orlando Smith was a B3 organ player, but he was somewhat lazy. He wouldn't come to gigs on time and people wanted to fire us. And at that time I had a wife and a kid. I had to make a salary of regular money. So he just kept coming to the gig late. The guy would dog us out of money. So I told the guys I was leaving and I was going to pursue my recording career. And so that's where Rufus Mitchell came in with Rujak Records. He recorded me. And I used that recording from that he had to make a few gigs around Annapolis, Baltimore, and some in D.C. The first Free Soul was the jazz group that I brought from Atlantic City. Everybody wanted to play with me except the organ player, Orlando. So we played gigs. We didn't do any recording with that band. But anyway, the guitar player, Harry Hunt, he knew the Washington Redskins football team, and they had a singing group. So he went to play with them and left me high and dry. So I had to hustle some musicians together to make these gigs I had on the book. And that's when the funky Free Soul band came together. And my sister was the manager, Gloria. She helped us with the name. She says, "Got a good name." I said, "Well, since I'm still Sir Joe, people around here know me by that name. We'll keep the Sir Joe out front and hire some younger musicians." And that's when I met Jackie Lee, guitar player, on all my stuff. Gregory Hammond's bass player, Charles Steptoe, drums, Leon Rogers, saxophone, Carissa Freeman, keyboards, Frank Delaney on congas, and myself on trumpet. With that group, that's when I recorded "I Got So Much Trouble in My Mind."
"I've Got So Much Trouble in My Mind" is the most well-known song off the Free Soul record. It's become kind of a timeless soul funk classic. It reached the R&B charts here in the States. It was beloved in Europe by the UK crowd. And in the generation that followed, it became a song that often got sampled. Joe, what is it about this song in particular that you think has made it resonate for so long?
It's high energy. Even though I'm singing about troubles, it has a happy feel. It makes you want to dance. As a matter of fact, we were playing the song before we recorded it. Every time we play it, the floor would fill up with people dancing. So I said, "I've got to record that." So we did a demo at Silver Spring Recording Studio. Can't think of the name of the studio now. Track. And the guy, Bill Tate, he was an engineer for the demo recording. About 6 months later, he called me and said, "I haven't done anything with that song, So Much Trouble." I said, "No, but I use it as a demo to get gigs. I sent it to promoters in a cassette. And they like, people would like the sound and they would hire us." So he said, "Well, we can do it better quality if you want to make a deal with them." So they had a record company called Mantis Records and Avalanche published. So we made a deal for the artists and I would be the writer and I would get paid, which that was a lie. and it would be the publisher. This was in 1970. I never thought that song would go this far. As a matter of fact, one of the DJs at WOL radio station, Soul Papa, unfortunately he's no longer with us, he was killed. He told me when I went to the radio to be interviewed, says a good song is a hot song, but after 90 days you need to have something else ready because these songs don't last long. But he's wrong. So Much Trouble has been spinning for over 50 years.
Joe, since we're talking about the Free Soul record, I'd like to just go track by track with you real quick. The next track on Side A after I Got So Much Trouble in My Mind is I Made a Promise.
That's a song I wrote when I was working with Rufus Mitchell and the Rude Jack Records. And Bill Tate and Carter Wells, producers of So Much Trouble, liked the song. So they had to buy it from Rude Jack in order to put it on the album, which is a different arrangement. It's more of a funky. In fact, I took the music from Fool in Love, I Continue to Turn. Well, I had an arrangement on that. I took the arrangement from that song and put it behind I Made a Promise. So I wrote I Made a Promise back in the 60s.
And then track three, which is called The Trouble with Trouble.
That song was written during the course of the sessions for the So Much Trouble album. And it's a socially conscious song where everybody's got something to complain about. And I'm basically saying we all have troubles. The trouble with trouble, we just have troubles. Live with
because of the rules. So you ride your bus. Mama fuss, daddy choke and cuss, all because of us. The trouble with trouble, go have some. The trouble with trouble, when it comes, it comes. The trouble with trouble.
Track four on Side A is called The Way They Do My Life.
That was one of the first social conscious songs I wrote. I wrote that song when I was a student at Virginia College down in Petersburg, Virginia. And it was a guy who was being drafted into the Vietnam War or the Army. And he was saying, Joe, you're lucky because you are a science major. I was a mathematics major and they weren't drafting science majors, which I didn't know until he told me. And he sort of drifted away. He said, the way they do my life, I can't stand it. I can't do nothing for myself without somebody getting in the way. And he just drifted into the horizon. And I went to my dorm room and wrote, The Way They Do My Life.
The way they do my life, I just can't stand it. The way they do my life, they must have plans. The way they do my life, I just don't know. Makes me wonder, what am I living for? From a child you raised me to get older, just to make me one of your soldiers. Killing people I know nothing of. When I was born, I only knew my mama's love. Yeah.
first song on side B is called Find Yourself.
Find Yourself. That's another socially conscious, where I basically say you need to find yourself because no one else can do it for you. The opening lines are, some people think they know what's best for people who've lost their way. So I'm basically saying you got to find yourself yourself. You can't depend on no one else to make you you.
Side B, track two, we get to Gonna Get Me a Friend.
That's a buddy-buddy song, you know, where guys may team up together, do a business, and most of my friends weren't like that. So I basically said, want to get me a friend someday, going to get me a friend some way, going to get me a buddy, going to make a lot of money.
I'm going to get me a friend some way. I'm going to get me a buddy. Make a lot of money.
And then the third track on side B is called Give Me Back My Freedom.
Another social tune. But my social tunes were not really hard and harsh. They were sort of don't step on my blue suede shoes type of songs, you know.
Talk to me about the fourth track on side B, which is called I Feel Like This.
That's a schizophrenic drug addict shooting up, and he feels different emotions. Leon Rogers was doing the lead singing on it.
Last song on the album is called Live Now Brothers.
I'm basically saying to people of color, stop screwing on over each other. We need to do something that's going to last, that will open a path for our sons and daughters.
Live now, brother, or you'll be gone not tomorrow. Or you'll be gone not tomorrow. The path you lead, your sons will follow.
Joe, I'm curious, did the record come together pretty quickly?
Well, it took about a month to do the album. We were gigging pretty good then. And the songs I had written, they weren't 100% complete. They were just pieces of songs, like I still do that now. I'll take a small recorder with and record maybe a hook or something like that. We spent 12 hours on the rhythm section in so much trouble. This is the drums, bass, guitar.
Joe, one other thing I wanted to ask you about the Free Soul record was the colorful illustration on the cover. It's unusual and it's kind of vibrant looking. How did that happen?
You said the magic word, illustrations. That's what they were for. I was trying to show this guy, was the head of the GSF Records, Larry Newton. I was showing him what I want the album cover to look like. And he took it and looked it over and said, "This is going to be the album cover." That's how I was drawing this, to show you what a photographer could do, take some pictures of a school bus with a soldier on it, or different things around town that show describes the music in the inside of the album. But he said, "No, this is good enough."
So Joe, right after you guys get done recording the Free Soul album, one of the first songs you record as a single after that is called No Time for Dreaming, which is a great song.
Well, see, I recorded that song the same time I did So Much Trouble and several other tunes, but the record company turned that one down. Charles Bradley, yeah, his album was featured one of my songs, and the album was entitled No Time for Dreaming.
For dreaming. I've got to get up and do my thing. I got no time for dreaming.
Dreaming, dreaming.
I've got to get on up,
get up,
and do my thing. Dream while you're sleeping. Time is steadily creeping. Open up your eyes before it's too late. Try a little harder. Stop gazing over yonder. Wake up and you'll get.
So you record No Time for Dreaming, which is a great song, and then you also record a few more singles called This Girl of Mine, I'm Gonna Get You, and Thanks Dad, and then ultimately you get picked up by Mercury in 1974, is that right?
Mercury picked me up right after This Girl of Mine, or Thanks Dad. It was Thanks Dad. That was the last thing I did with GSF. And I hired this conga player, Carlos Montanez. He was playing with the Average White Band, and he played the congas on Thanks Dad. They didn't promote it though. They just threw it out there just like GSF did.
Before the Mercury deal, there were other labels that had come to you that had wanted to sign you as a solo artist, but you didn't want to do that, right? You didn't want to abandon the band.
That's partially right. But then again, GSF pretty much wanted to hold on to me. And I thought if I did anything that would jeopardize that contract, they would sue me and I wouldn't get a dime. So I sort of stuck with GSF Records, whose A&R person was Lloyd Price. He was introducing me to different people, Bert Sugarman, Kenny Gamble, and there were a couple other folks that he had introduced me to who were interested in sponsoring me, but just me. And they made it clear it was just me they wanted. They didn't want the band. They would put me with some super musicians.
And then, as is so often the case with so many bands, you guys broke up. There were some financial problems and everyone just started going their own separate ways, right?
Yeah, well, Leon, the saxophone player and second tenor, he wanted to do his own thing. He had a band called Black Roots and Spices. He went his way. And the bass player, Gregory Hammonds, he was a traffic controller. He said, "I make more money doing this than playing bass." And he was featured on So Much Trouble, the bass player. All of his licks were accentuated. A lot of kids would come up and say to Greg and say, "Show me how you play that bass line." He was getting as much attention as I was. So anyway, everybody went their own different ways. I had a fire in my house in 75 or 76. And my kids almost burned up in it. And so I said, no, this music is good. Thing is going away too much. So I went back to school and got a job.
So you went back to school and got a degree in architecture, correct?
That's correct, University of Maryland. That was full time.
So you took a long hiatus from the music business, but you eventually returned with some solo records.
The reason why I came back after several years, about 15 years, I laid off. And there was this company in Japan wanted to reissue the song, the album. Blues International, I think that was the name of the record company. I have a CD that was released in 2003 called They Want Funky Music. I did a lot of programming on the computer and so forth, but it's got some real good tunes. Then I did a live album called Alive and Well. That's also a CD.
Joe, tell me about some of your influences in terms of other artists or albums that inspired you.
Yeah, I probably would think Tutu, Miles Davis. But I like the way Miles plays his horn. It's a unique sound, and it sounds futuristic. Wilson Pickett, Midnight Hour, and all the rest of his funky stuff, 99 and a half, and all those real funky tones. Sly Stone. My favorite singer is Jesse Velvet. He's an old R&B singer and jazz singer. I put him on the level of Johnny Mathis. He's not funky or anything like that. He's a very romantic singer, but he has a sensational voice. Oh, James Brown on the Goodfoot. When I was appearing at the Apollo Theater, James Brown came in and stopped on the middle of the stage right in front of me, looked me up and down.
Oh, that's amazing. The Godfather's soul was checking you out. Let's listen to a second of Get Down Baby, which was a single you cut in 1974 for Mercury, before we say our farewell. Joe, just as a reminder to the listeners, you do have some CDs for sale, and you also told me about a reissue of the album that might be coming up. Tell me about that real quick.
Okay, starting with Bongo. I've also made a somewhat small deal with Mr. Bongo International, and we're talking about reissuing the album in Great Britain. He was interested in some of the shelf material, as well as the So Much Trouble album. And I told him, yeah, we could work a deal because I own all the rights in Europe and publishing and master recording. Universal Music Group owns the USA side. And I had an album that was released in 2003 called They Want Funky Music. It's got 10, 12 all new material that I wrote. And as I said, I'm playing most of the instruments. Then I have a live album, Alive and Well, and they can be picked up at CD Baby. Just type in Joe Quarterman / They Want Funky Music. Also, I wrote a song for Martha Hyatt, and it's on her last album that she recorded. Martha Hyatt was a backup singer with James Brown. It's called You Haven't Done Nothing Until You Do It With Me. Yes, we will catch a song. I do it on the show, and people seem to appreciate that song. Actually, I really thought that I would be a writer and producer as opposed to a performer. Performing is okay. I'm not limber and smooth like James Brown or some of these other cats that can really put it to a dance, I would have been resolved to writing songs and producing them.
Joe, it's been such an honor to get to talk to you today, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for the interview.
Hopefully this interview will shed some light on your music and career and get you some new fans.
I hope so also.
Bye, Joe. Thanks again.
Pleasure meeting you.
For an archive of Sounds Visual Radio episodes, please visit our website at soundsvisualradio.com. You can find us on Instagram at soundsvisualmedia. You can find us on Facebook at soundsvisualpdx. Or you can email us at soundsvisualradio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.